Welcome to WRVO's Community Forum. I'm Fergus Nicol of the BBC World Service. I'm at City Hall Commons in downtown Syracuse. And ladies and gentlemen, it's a pleasure and a privilege to be invited here to share in this Community Forum today on culture under siege in Pakistan. May I welcome you all on behalf of WRVO. And I should say that this is one of the BBC's highly prized partners in the United States. Also, may I welcome you on behalf of SUNY Oswego, which has launched an extraordinary project that will run through this academic year called Caravanserai, a place where cultures meet. Now, this was an idea that grabbed me immediately in person. I find the notion of the Caravanserai immensely romantic. It pervades all the books I've read from the Middle East, North Africa, well into Europe, and, of course, South Asia as well. I was discussing it with my wife before I left, and I was describing these solid, square stone structures which offered safety for the night to traveling merchants primarily. This is a physical and psychic resting place where, guarded from the lawlessness that is outside the walls, music, poetry, as well as trading products can be exchanged and shared, and in the case of culture, perpetuated. Few as pretty, I think, as the one by the tomb of the Emperor Jahangir at Shahdara outside Lahore in Pakistan. Familiar territory to our guests today, and I'm delighted to introduce you to Professor Asma Balas from Ithaca College, where she heads the Center for the Study of Culture, Race, and Ethnicity. She'll have a lot to tell us today about the rise of militarism and militancy in her home country. Also, what culture and what women especially can do to stand up to those phenomena. Mohammed Najmuddin is a master practitioner of an extraordinary art form whose roots go deep, at least seven centuries deep, in his own family. Qawwali singing and playing is one of the most luminous parts of Islamic culture. So I'm very excited to hear what place that culture plays in the artistic life of today's Pakistan. And Mara Ahmed comes to us today with an amazingly multi-talented portfolio, economist, financial analyst, artist, and now filmmaker. I would strongly recommend her documentary, The Muslims I Know, shot primarily but not exclusively in Rochester, as an antidote to the lazy stereotyping that you'll find in a lot of the news media. Before we talk about the threats that we hear so much about in the news media, by seeing if we can get some kind of working definition of what Pakistani culture is. So let me start with Mara. You're a collage artist. You've described how your work brings together sometimes even random elements. Does that help us understand culture in a bigger sense, that there are so many different elements that make up the bigger picture?
Absolutely. And I think culture is the finest form of human expression through the arts, through sciences, through the humanities. Culture is also a pattern of knowledge and beliefs and values and attitudes which are handed from one generation to another. So going back to the topic being Pakistani culture is under siege, I feel that not only is it too conveniently political to say that, but it's also, culture is so broad, it's something so huge, that I feel that such a statement simply cannot be made about any culture.
Okay, thanks for those opening thoughts. Mohammed Najmuddin, in terms of the way you see perhaps your art fitting into the bigger picture, what is the fit? Is it primarily religion and spirituality, personal or national identity? What do you see as the priority?
The priority is the religious side, because our Qawwali is a part of culture of Pakistan. It belongs majorly to the spiritual side, but in general, it's a part of our culture. And I think we can work together to purify it much for making the world a good place.
Could you just describe to us what a Qawwali song might contain in the lyrics? Is it invocations to God simply? What else do you sing about?
The main message of the Qawwali is love to to God and second to the human beings, and to spread the message of humanity and peace to all over the world.
Asma, let me bring you in with an opening thought on this question about what the cultural identity is. Is it hard to pin down? We heard Mara describe a really complex mixture. Do you see it that way?
Well, I was going to say that there are several different ethnic groups in Pakistan. There are several languages. There are different provinces. So it's really very difficult to speak about one culture. I would speak about many overlapping cultures, some of which might actually be contradictory. And if I were to take my own example, I don't know whether I'm embarrassed by now or whether I've reconciled myself to it, but I belong to that 1%, I suppose, of Pakistanis whose first language in Pakistan was English, because I was educated till the age of 15 in Catholic convents by European nuns. And so a lot of my culture was very, unfortunately, Europeanized, Anglophobic. But the point is that there isn't really just one single culture. And to be Pakistani also means to have a certain etiquette, a certain view of the world. There's dress, there's food, which differs. The understanding of the world can differ. There are Muslims who are from every shade of religious opinion, from Sufis, as well as to people who are ultra-conservatives. So I'd like to think of it as a rich mosaic, which is sometimes has tensions in it. I don't think it's so neat. And I think there are multiple faces of Pakistani culture, as three of us sitting here should show you too.
Yes, indeed. That question of the tensions, Asma, is that a constant process of kind of mutual exploration, or is it a process of one trying to dominate the other?
I think cultures, so even sort of being in the U.S. for 30 years, I understand that there's a dominantly white culture, which is kind of pretty monocultural, but that there are additional subcultures belonging to different racial groups. And I would say that in Pakistan, too, if there is one ethnic group that's hegemonic or dominant, that, you know, their maybe cultural values might seem to prevail. So I don't know if it's simply a question of domination, but I do think that there are always struggles and that culture is something that's living and changing. And I think that's the light in which we should see it.
Let's get then to this fundamental question of threats to culture, the issue that Mara took exception with right off the bat. I think it's worth exploring because there is a perception, not just because we see extremist violence, and I'm not picking out Pakistan especially. Across the Islamic world, it's a challenge that's facing many different cultures. But I wonder whether we're getting away with a lazy simplification that's basically putting a political top line on everything about a country like Pakistan. Do you think that's what's happening? Let's come back to Mara again.
I do feel that that's what's happening. And, you know, I think that there's an argument to be made for political tensions and for social upheaval to, in fact, produce very interesting culture, very interesting art and literature. And I think Pakistan is a case in point. I was very lucky to see an exhibition called Hanging Fire in New York City in 2009, a cutting-edge, thought-provoking, influential artists from Pakistan. To tell you the truth, when I went there, I wasn't really sure about what I was going to find, and I was a little bit afraid that I might be embarrassed. It was some of the best art that I've seen coming out of any part of the world. It was unique, it was vigorous, it had something to say.
How hard would it be to put on that same exhibition in Pakistan? How much opposition would there be, and from what parts of society?
That's actually a very usual question. A lot of the artists who were exhibited in New York City talk about how people sometimes perceive their art to be exportable, but not to be really based and rooted in Pakistan because it would be controversial there or threatened or whatever. And they always make a point to explain that they are very deeply rooted in Pakistan. Many of them live in Pakistan.
Let me pick up with Mohammed Najmuddin. On this politicizing of culture, perhaps part of the lazy stereotyping that I said at the beginning we were going to try to avoid, does that follow you as you travel? Do you get people coming up to you trying to understand what you do in your art and in your spiritual presentation in the context of politics, generals, bombs?
The people come in our concert. They generally like it. On Friday, we performed in Helena. There are many people came to us after the concert, and they said that while you were performing, we were weeping, we were crying.
So your music is reaching out powerfully to people in Montana.
Yeah.
What did they tell you they were getting from it that they understood as being uniquely Pakistani?
Yeah. They said that they're getting the message from us that Pakistan is a very good country and the people of Pakistan are very much like U.S. people and the other peoples of other countries also. We are not extremist as it is politicized all over the world.
Mohammed Najmuddin, thanks. If you're just joining us, this is WRVO's Community Forum in Syracuse. Today we're talking about culture under siege or not in Pakistan. I'm Fergus Nicol of the BBC World Service. Najmuddin, just pick up on that if you would. We're hearing personal experiences, emotional force. What, for you, outside the music that fills so much of your life, how much do you see that exchange between the politics that we hear about outside, the society, and those foreign influences that we were discussing a minute ago? Does it change the way your family lives their life?
No. No, because we have no concern about the politics. We totally think about our work, our art. We have no concern about the politics in Pakistan.
Is that the best way for the artistic community, the cultural community, to deal with, we might call it a threat, we might not, but to deal with the pressures certainly that might reduce the cultural room for exploration?
In my opinion, it's right way for me, but maybe I am wrong. An artist should have to think about all these things as a part of his life.
Do you fear that your country could ever become something like Taliban-style Afghanistan, or is that a grotesque caricature?
No, I don't think so. Because these people, as far as my concern, these people have no impact on general public. And the general public is aware how to go through the culture and cultural issues in Pakistan.
This question of the way to secure, to safeguard the future, to secure against potential future threats.
Well, I don't think it's possible to secure ourselves from threats. We live in a world that we've contributed to making a dangerous world, and it's a conceit to think we can remove ourselves from the dangers. But what I was going to say was that part of the reason Najmuddin so quickly said no, he doesn't think that Pakistan will become like Afghanistan, is because historically the religious extremists have never won more than 3, 4, 5% of the popular vote. That should tell us something. What that tells us is that Pakistanis will endure, they have endured, they will endure. But whether it can be in complete safety, I would say maybe the United States of America needs to get out of Pakistan and at least stop killing its people through drones. And maybe that can secure us a little bit.
Can I ask, I don't mean to exclude Najmuddin from this part of the conversation, he might want to chip in, but what is the role of women? Asma, I'll come back to you right away. What is the role of women in securing this future in as much as it can be done?
Well, there have been active women's groups in Pakistan for 30 years. I said I've been in the U.S. for 30 years, and they were there even before I left. So women organize themselves. If the two of us are, by the way, not by any stretch of the imagination unique, Pakistani women... our educated Pakistani women are very much like us. They are outspoken, and you might consider us even somewhat bold. So I think that I certainly wouldn't want to portray Pakistani women as helpless and let's get rush over there and save them. They're doing a pretty good job themselves, and women's movements have actually forced changes in certain laws that were inimical to them under Ziaul-Haq. But of course, you know, you're facing the power of the state. And so it takes a while. really, I'm one of those people who thinks that a lot of bad in the world is done by do-gooders.
But there have been very many, and Mara, perhaps you'll pick up on this, there have been very many feisty women standing up to the state, but also in the person of Benazir Bhutto representing the state. So it's clear that women have not been subjugated, but what's the future?
Well, I would like to actually answer that question by describing another artwork to you, because this is about culture, and I want to share Pakistani culture with you, which, like I told you, is extremely exciting. One of the works that I saw in New York was a series of photographs by a woman artist called Adila Suleiman. And what she did in these photographs was she used herself as the model. And what she did was she picked all the tools of household work, like multi-tiered tiffins, cooking pots, spoons, and she painted them in these very bright, beautiful colors. Sometimes she painted peacocks or beautiful red flowers on them. And then she assembled them into these very impressive helmets that looked like military headgear almost. And so she's wearing this military headgear and she's transforming the Pakistani housewife into some kind of Mongol warrior. The series is called Women Rule. You know, I think that's a very good comment on women's role in Pakistan, because I think, in a way, she is politically commenting on the Hudood Ordinance, which was introduced by General Ziaul-Huq in the 1980s, and which really perverted the rights of women in a legal way.
Just to explain, these are specific punishments prescribed by Islamic law.
So-called Islamic law, so-called, I think, is an important word here. And very political, of course, because Zia was trying to consolidate his own power. So all of this Islamization was just an instrument that he was using to do that. So she is commenting on that, but then I think she is also commenting on the split that Asma was mentioning between unmistakable power that's wielded by women in Pakistan, and then also the oppression and abuse of women at the same time.
Najmuddin, is there something you wanted to say? Clearly, the band that you perform with, they're all male personnel. How do you see the role of women in culture, traditional and in the future?
As far as the Qawwali is concerned, because Qawwali is related to the spiritual side, as per my expression, and as I have from my father, that women are restricted to perform in Qawwali. But as a whole, women are the part of culture, and men should take them with us to go ahead in the future.
Is there any equivalent for women in that kind of religious self-expression, that religious devotional music? Is there another strand that is like Qawwali?
Yeah, women can sing in Pakistan as Abda Parveen, as you know. She's a female singer.
Yeah, she's amazing.
She's a female singer.
Najmuddin, thank you. You're listening to WRVO's Community Forum. I'm Fergus Nicol from the BBC World Service. And we've got some intriguing questions from the audience. Many thanks to all of you. Here's one to get you all going, I think. Being portrayed inaccurately in news media around the world must be frustrating and even devastating. Many Pakistanis may feel helpless as a result. What are some initiatives being taken in order to promote Pakistan in a better light? Who wants to take that? Mara.
That's what I do through my filmmaking. It's basically to try and have some kind of dialogue between different cultures and to flip stereotypes, to cause some kind of paradigm shift so that people see the same thing but with fresh eyes. And so my first film was called The Muslims I Know. And the reason I made that film was because I felt that Muslims were portrayed in a very one-sided, very narrow way in the media, even on PBS. And I really felt that somebody had to stand up and show something different, because the Muslims that we were seeing in the media were not really people that I could relate to. And I'm Muslim myself. Most of the people I know are Muslim. And I just didn't see any people like that in the media at all. So in order to remedy that, I made a film which showed people like myself, just normal, regular Muslims, American Muslims, and kind of gave them a chance, provided them a platform where they could have their voices heard. Because like somebody said in that question, it is very frustrating to be constantly talked about, but never to be able to be a part of that discourse. That is very frustrating. And so the film was an answer to that frustration.
Okay, here's another one from the audience, and this gets into the politics that we've discussed, and I'm going to ask Asma to pick up this one. My view is that the CIA and other warriors should come home to this country and allow Pakistanis to enjoy their culture. What are your views, if you wish to share them?
Amen.
Yes. Yay.
I also wanted to say that people of color in this audience should understand us sitting on this panel, because the burden of representation is something we all bear as a result of being the other. And the problem is that the media is controlled by fewer and fewer corporations. And so the control of the media is a very important thing as well, because you could make all the wonderful films in the world, but, you know, the distribution and everything else is very controlled. And I read somewhere that in one's lifetime, in your lifetime and in mine, that over 3/5 of the images we will ever see have been produced just by a handful of corporations. 3 out of 5 images in our lifetime.
Okay, thanks for that, Asma. Here's a question I think you're all going to want to discuss, because it's an intriguing and possibly very provocative one. Is Islamic religion better than any other religion?
If you're asking me, I'm an observant Muslim, and for me, Islam is sufficient. That's my deen. I'm not interested in anybody else's life or how you're practicing your religion.
Najmuddin.
I also say the same words. Islam, as far as my concern, is everything for me. And I cannot say anything about any other religion, because I believe that every religion has same teachings and same things like Islam.
Mara.
I mean, I can't make a judgment about what is the best religion, but I think all religions basically teach the same things. They answer the same existential questions. I respect all religions equally.
Two questions. I'll put this one to Asma and Mara. Asma and Mara are two beautiful, confident, articulate women. From my knowledge, women of this caliber can be viewed as intimidating and even looked down on in Middle Eastern culture. Does this still ring true today, Asma?
Actually, I was pretty successful in my society until Ziaul Haq kicked me out of the Foreign Service, so I don't think I was looked down on, but I will tell you that many people in this country look down on me. So I have to say that it's because I'm a person of color here. And my neighbor once, after 2001, said, well, wouldn't you want to go back to your own country and walk behind a man? And I said, well, actually, in my country, I walk in front of the man. And if you're asking me to choose between racism and sexism, I reject them both.
Mara.
You know, like Asma just said, racism, sexism, homophobia, I mean, all of these things exist in every society. And I certainly don't think that Pakistan is any different from any other society. It does have these problems, but these problems exist here as well. So I don't see why Pakistan is any different than any other country in that context.
Perhaps you could address this next question, because I think Asma already has to some extent. For those of you who've moved to the US, how does your cultural background inform your experience of American culture? We had a comment from Asma, but Mara, from your perspective of being upstate New York, traveling around, you've clearly seen a lot of nations in your career and in your life. How do you bring it all together?
Well, I think that now there are more and more people like myself, because, you know, I was born in Pakistan. I was born in Lahore. Still love the city of Lahore and think Lahore is Lahore, as they say, but was actually brought up in Brussels. So went to elementary school, middle school, and went to the lycée over there, and then went back to Pakistan and then moved to the United States after I got married in 1993. So I've lived in 3 separate continents, and I think there are more and more people like myself now. And I think what it does is it really makes you more of a global citizen. I don't consider myself so much to be a Pakistani or an American or a person of any particular ethnicity or nationality. You know, I just see myself as being a global citizen, and I'm interested in big things like justice and equal rights and women's rights. National borders don't really matter to me.
Najmuddin, I'll leave you out just for this one, since you haven't moved here full time at least. But let me pick up with a question from the audience here that really could sum up what we're talking about. From the start, culture in Pakistan has been framed in this debate as either under attack or not. Could it be better understood as a clash between mainstream Pakistani culture and a new extremist subculture? Asma.
Whoever wrote that question should be here on the panel with us. Thank you very much. Yes, of course. Basically, in every society, as I said at the start, you know, there are always tensions and conflicts, and Fergus had asked a question about whether one particular group is trying to dominate things. That always happens everywhere. But one can probably look at it in these terms, that there is a pervasive Pakistani culture. I don't want to use the word dominant, but it's pervasive. It's in the lives of people. And then there are the extremist elements who were always there. Frankly, they were there even before Ziaul Haq came along. Cinemas were burned even under Ayub Khan. Yeah. It's just a way of showing your disgust, you know. You go and burn down something and that's, you've shown that you're unhappy with it. Those elements have always been there. They will always be there. And in spite of that, people thrive and people survive and people create and love and live and find meaning in their lives.
Najmuddin, just let me come. Mara's keen to come in. Also, Najmuddin, go on. Just say a word, please.
Yes, as she said, that despite the threatening people in the, Pakistan who are the extremists, the people love and go forward with their lives and with their culture, with their religion, all the things.
Mara.
Like I said, I like to flip things around to make people see things in a different way. And so if there's an attack on a cinema theater or a museum in Pakistan, we assume that Pakistani culture is under threat. Now, something similar to that would be an argument that because there have been attacks on abortion clinics and doctors have been killed, murdered in this country, that medicine is under threat in the United States. You know, it's that kind of argument. So I just wanted to quickly say that. And then going back to what Asma was saying about how culture is constantly changing, and I see that in the art and the literature that's coming out of Pakistan as well. It is imbued with a lot of politics and with a lot of tensions, but it's also a celebration of survival. And I think Pakistan is an incredibly resilient country. Anatole Levin has written an excellent book about Pakistan. It's called Pakistan, a Hard Country. And it has a lot of depth of knowledge and a lot of clarity. So I strongly recommend that book to anyone who wants to understand Pakistan. And in that book, he describes the Pakistani masses as being very archaic, very conservative, very inert, almost somnolent. So that in one way, that's bad because it's difficult to bring reform in a country where most of the people are like that. But on the other hand, it's also very good because it makes it impossible to change society completely because of one ideology. It's simply not going to happen. Most people in Pakistan are not loyal to the state. They are loyal to their clan. They are loyal to their family. They are loyal to their brotherhood. And so in a country like that, it's very difficult for one ideology, one extremist ideology, to completely change the entire population and the way of thinking in that country. It's impossible to do that.
Well, on that very determined note of resilience, let's wind up our discussion. Thank you for listening to WRVO's Community Forum in Syracuse. I'd like to thank today's panelists for joining us in the discussion, Dr. Asma Barnas, Professor and Director of the Center for the Study of Culture, Race, and Ethnicity at Ithaca College, Muhammad Najmuddin, Pakistani musician of Qawwal Najmuddin, Saifuddin and Brothers, and Mara Ahmed, a Pakistani-born artist and, as we've been hearing, filmmaker too. Today's audio engineers were Mark Lavunia, Leah Landry, and Josh Russell, with additional support from Michael Amy, Fred Vigent, and Lee Russin. I'm Fergus Nicol. Thanks for coming, and thanks everybody for listening.